Blog Talk Radio.
Coldplay, you are listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network and Affiliates. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the creator, producer, co-host of the show. And also in the virtual studio is my colleague and co-host, Dr. Phil Marshall, co-founder and chief product officer of Conversa Health, an innovative patient engagement and digital checkup company. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Greg. So good to be with you again.
Oh, loud and clear today. That's great. So This Week in Health Innovation is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the innovation impulse from idea to business model. And today we conclude our coverage for 2014 with an encore appearance from one of our favorite entrepreneurs, that being Jeff Clapp. Jeff is a co-founder and CEO of San Francisco-based GetBetter.com, also known on Twitter as @BetterPHA. He is no stranger to digital health innovation, having spent more than 12 years disrupting the telemedicine market with Health Hero Network. And during his tenure, he served in multiple roles, including COO and Chief Technology Officer. And as CTO, Jeff designed and implemented award-winning software products, including Business Week's 2000 Product of the Year. And as COO, Jeff guided the company through the bubble bursting in Silicon Valley. And I'm really curious whether he sees any of that on the horizon for 2015. A summary of GetBetter.com's value proposition highlights healthcare simplified. GetBetter.com combines the service of a personal assistant with medical expertise from Mayo Clinic, so you can worry less about logistics and just focus on being well. And with that as an abbreviated intro, Phil, over to you. Help us get to know Jeff.
Absolutely, Jeff. Good morning.
Okay, good morning. I've got to thank my mom for writing that intro because that was amazing. Very, very kind. Thank you.
So, Jeff, no, I don't think there's any intro really that would be too descriptive or too complimentary, because your background is pretty remarkable in being really a trailblazer of digital health with Health Hero and really looking at patient engagement from the early days on through now with Get Better and helping to serve Mayo Clinic and I'm guessing a number of large clients with that solution. You've seen a lot of things happen in the marketplace. What I'd like to start with today is I'd like to get just a quick overview of what Get Better and your work with Mayo Clinic is really all about, and what kinds of challenges are you trying to meet with that solution? And then we'll go on to some of the bigger market issues at play.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, again, thank you for the kind intro. That just means that I'm getting older, and I've been lucky to be part of a lot of really great teams. And so along the way, you know, Health Hero and now with Better and other things I've been involved with, like Rock Health. But with Better, you know, what we saw as a trend in the marketplace, really developing over years and years, and we just felt the time was right in 2014 to launch this product, was this real shift towards an empowered patient. And what an empowered patient needs is more than just access to their medical records, but actually a fiscal responsibility, a legal responsibility to have insurance, a fiscal shift in the way that high-deductible health plans and HSAs and FSAs work, and also a shift in the general consumer market for people taking more responsibility and a more hands-on approach and demanding more personalization into what they do, whether that's in the financial services or other things. And combine that lastly with the idea that we all have to say we carry around a supercomputer, in our pocket, but I think Chamath, one of our investors, puts it best. We are actually carrying around a remote control in our pocket. And when we have that remote control in our pocket, we expect to be able to press a button and get whatever it is that we need. Food delivered, a black car to come pick us up, movie tickets, all of these things are there. It's not there for healthcare. So what we wanted to do is combine all these trends that we've been watching over the last few years and try to develop a service that we call the personal health assistant, who is your advocate, who's somebody that works on your side, who is that one button away for anything you need in healthcare, from help with chronic care and diseases and management of those things, pregnancy, weight loss, but also all of the administrative side, all of the insurance issues, appointment making, preventive care, all of the things that our busy lives kind of keep us from doing a good job at. And so we end up doing a lot of administrative work for people, and that usually then builds up the trust that allows us to do the clinical work with people. So those are the trends that we saw that led us to starting this service, which went live in April of this year.
Well, congratulations on that. And so you've had several months now of experience in delivering the service, this this personal health assistant or a concierge or the one-button assistant for your healthcare, which is a really intriguing and powerful idea. And so give us an update. What have you seen as being the response of patients? And what about also the air teams and how they take advantage of the information that that arose between visits?
Yeah, I think so. This is really interesting. I think I can say unequivocally now that there's a gentleman I used to work with. His name was Herb Ruth at Health Hero, and he used to say, "Someone's going to make a lot of money doing this. I hope it's us." And I think that's definitely also true of what we have seen with Better. Obviously, I have a lot of confidence in this team and this product, but most importantly, in the context of this podcast and health innovation, someone is going to be wildly successful with this because we've already had in the short amount of time a 250,000 downloads, and a lot of that is honestly we only really started marketing in August. And so we have a lot of consumer interest and a lot of people coming with very unique healthcare issues saying, "I need help, I want help, I want, this sounds good because my insurance company doesn't work for me." You know, there's very little in the healthcare system that works for the consumer. So that's one of the big things that we've seen. Now, I'll tell you, in maintaining relationships with people, forget patients, but just people on their mobile device or in their everyday lives is a difficult thing, whether you're too engaged or you're not engaged enough, finding the right pace was really one of the things that we work on every day, but really focused on April through August before we did any marketing. And that's definitely one of the biggest challenges is, you know, how do we make sure that we're always there and always responsive and reaching out the right amount proactively, but also not overwhelming people. Because that remote control analogy breaks down when your remote control keeps pinging you and asking you to do things too. So we've had to learn a lot about service delivery in a very consumer model, which honestly I think is something that healthcare hasn't had to do and why we really focused on direct to consumer.
Okay, yeah. So what about the care team's response to the information that has been gained between visits? Because as we know, and perhaps Mayo Clinic is on the forefront of changing in this regard, we know that the system is still very visit and encounter-centric, and it's not used to taking advantage of data that has arisen between visits. What's been the reaction of care teams?
Yeah, it's really mixed. I will tell you, and our personal health assistant team can share lots of anecdotes about this, but, you know, the first time they make a call into a health system on a patient's behalf and have to explain who and what they are, and that we have HIPAA authorization and we have all these things and we provide all of that, there's a lot of doubt at the beginning from these teams. You know, who is this person? Are you trying to steal my patient? There's still a lot of this idea that the patient is their asset. And by holding on to information or holding on to the relationship, that's their financial source. And what we have to help them understand very quickly, some people get it faster than others, is we're not taking away your patient. We're here to work on their behalf. And honestly, because we're experts in these things, we're going to make your job easier. And we don't have to, you don't have to explain to us what a deductible is. So you don't have to explain to us what these things mean. And in fact, our job is to make your patient's experience better. So we actually have now 85, I haven't looked at the numbers in a couple of days, doctors who have actually been promoting, and I don't like saying prescribing apps because that's not a real thing, but have actually been saying to their patients, this is something you should use if you are interested in between visits. So bringing change to the healthcare system is very, very hard. We all know that. If you're a listener of this podcast, you know that. But there's a lot of very innovative people out there who are saying, you know, this makes sense, and they're only going to call my office or somebody else, and I'd rather have an office that they work with, I can trust, backed by Mayo Clinic knowledge and staff that that I can trust in between the visits. So every phone call is different.
It's interesting. Yeah, you know, I was just going to say that it's interesting to hear that you still have to get those doctors on board, even though it was their own healthcare system that actually deployed your solution. Are they still sort of an autonomous group out there that that have to individually buy in, or increasingly are physicians part of systems that are embracing solutions and they're asked to just get in line?
Well, most of this population that we're talking about in 2014, with a few exceptions, but for the majority of our population, it's actually patients who are coming into a doctor's office where we haven't worked with the system yet, and we don't have a contract with the system. We just have a relationship with the patient, and the patient says, "This person's working on my behalf." And so, in those cases, you know, it's not regional. I want everyone to disavow their thinking that in New York and Boston and Austin and San Francisco and L.A., everyone's really progressive and the middle of the country is not. In fact, it couldn't be any farther from the truth. It's not a regional thing, and it's also not an age thing. So far, it's more just about, what the financial incentives are for that health system and that doctor, and what their risk profile is. The more risk that they have on that patient in between visits, whether that's a readmission risk or other things, the more willing they are to say, this is interesting, why don't you try this? But if they're, you know, honestly, one place where we've got a lot of pushback is concierge medicine, because the concierge doctors in general tend to think that we're here to steal their patients. And that's taken some time to kind of get them over that hump. So each system and each type of person is very different. And I wish I could tell you the trends, because it would certainly make my life a lot easier. But a lot of the stereotypes we talk about just aren't true.
Well, it's so interesting for you to hear about concierge medicine. You know, with my experience with even large primary care practices, they really do pride themselves on already knowing how their patients are doing between visits, and yet, as it sounds like you've also discovered, it couldn't really be further from the truth. And so I'd like for us to dig into the dynamics there a little bit, because right now we have still a largely visit and encounter-based model. Everybody's talking about the need for more primary care, but we know the volume of patients that are coming into the system would easily overwhelm primary care if we stuck with a visit-based model. And so I'd like to talk with you a little bit about that transition to value, the use of digital technology, and the role of primary care. So give us a sense for what you're seeing on the horizon, whether it's at Better or elsewhere, that really speaks to how the healthcare system can provide a front line of service to patients when they're met with an increased number of patients and demand while not being able to really increase their primary care workforce.
Yeah, as an entrepreneur, when you think about this, it's fascinating and exciting because it's literally the definition of a market, right? There's a high demand, there's a low capacity, there's challenges delivering at a scale, and there's a lot of money around it. So as an entrepreneur, it's just you salivate when you kind of think about this problem. And I think that's why you see a lot of companies like Doctors on Demand, Teladoc, certainly a little bit older, and other people trying to extend the visit model virtually, not just for the ease of the patients, although, of course, that is there. Being able to do a virtual consult on your iPad or computer or phone is amazing, certainly the stuff of the future when we think back to what we thought of a visit might be. But I think it also kind of just continues to romanticize the visit as the model. And so while I think those companies are really doing some amazing and great things, I think we have to think about the in-between as the activities of daily living. If we start, we've convinced everyone that healthcare is this kind of periodic, kind of once a year thing you think about when you get your annual exam, or it's emergent, right? So if we can start thinking about the activities of daily living and the tiny things we can do every day, sometimes behavioral, sometimes administrative, sometimes just preventive, that's where we're going to start moving. We're going to start really moving the needle, because I think as long as we're a visit-based system, and I would argue also a symptoms-based system, we're not getting out in front of anything. So if we continue to be a symptoms-based system, we should just buy more ambulances because we're going to wait till you get pain to do anything about where you are. And I think as a system, independent of Better or any other company, if we can't start to get out in front of those things, and we have decades of data on this, that if we're still dealing with just the symptoms, we're going to continue to have an obese population that consumes an amazing amount of healthcare, and we hope we get lucky enough at the point of symptoms under that much stress and events that our actuarial models and even our medicine science can keep up with where we are. It's a system that if you sit back and think about it, it's doomed for failure.
Well, it's interesting because as an entrepreneur, I think that you're right, and you're seeing a lot of business models emerge that are really trying to go at different aspects of the solution. There is the Better model, which is that personal health assistant that's really consumer driven, which is very exciting. There's the retail clinic model that is trying to absorb some of that demand and even trying to get out in front of some of these consumer centric trends, which is very exciting. You've got the biometrics and device, explosion, if you will, and so there's a lot of activity around that, and then you've got different models of electronic care like telemedicine, and additional things like Conversa's digital checkup. That are really really automating the outreach to patients to understand how they're doing between visits. As we like to say, you're not going to know unless you ask. And when you ask, they'll likely tell you, and they may be surprised by the results. And so all of those different kinds of business models emerging are really going after this explosion that has been created as a result of the transition to value-based care, the increased demand on the system, and the increased digital capacity of both patient and delivery system. And so as you look at those different components, and let's assume, knock on wood, that the economy continues to go well, and that the investment community is still very active and excited, what do you see on the horizon that excites you most over the next 12 months? And here now I'm really drawing upon probably your Rock Health hat more than anything. What do you see that excites you the most? What are the sectors that excite you the most? Is it really all about that intersection of value-based care, digital, and meeting increased consumer demand?
Sure. So I think, we always assume the future is going to happen faster than it is, and then the past was always longer ago, right? So I think that I don't know whether this is a 2015 thing, but you used exactly the right word for what I wanted to say, which is you talked about components. minute clinics, devices, services like ours, personal health assistants. If you drew those boxes out, and you could break out a few other ones, but if you drew out these components and you talked about, there's two interesting things if you're going to draw this as a graph, is you draw out those boxes in the middle, right? The primary consumer of those things are actually the end consumer, not hospital CFOs, not plans, but minute clinics, devices, and personalized services, which is really fascinating. If I'm making the decision to walk into a Walmart, buy myself a Jawbone Up or a Fitbit, and walk over to the minute clinic, these are all decisions I'm making for myself that are outside of the system that are very different than I would have made 10 years ago, and connect them, of course, with a service like ours. But the other interesting thing is what's missing is if I walk into a minute clinic today and sit down and say, you know, I've been having this chest pain for a while and I saw this other doctor and he said I have, something that starts with an E. That minute clinic is going to look at me and go, all right, I can either list out all of the SNOMED codes that start with an E or I'll guess because I have no way to get to your medical records. I have no way to get to your information. And the true explosion, I think there's a bang that's much bigger than this bang, which is when we get data portability. And as an industry, it is the only thing that matters if we really want to see this industry grow. And it is the only thing that's really going to put the accelerant to have billion-dollar valuations for health IT companies, but, you know, that will likely be coming out of places like Rock Health, is it's going to be powered by data portability and the patient at the center of that. What we're seeing is this shift away from hospital CFOs, health plan CFOs, who are making enterprise business decisions, which honestly resulted in some really crappy software. And as a shift to the consumer, higher quality consumer-grade products. But if the medical records and data and information doesn't flow with it, then this movement will continue to be stunted. And that's the trend, I think, is the single most interesting one to track. Because the miniaturization of devices is fascinating. The consumerization of devices like Misfit and Jawbone, what they're doing, fascinating stuff. The MinuteClinic stuff is awesome. But none of it stands on its own as well as it stands integrated to truly go after health. Wellness and things you could argue differently, but health-related things, we need to get that data portability. That's the trend to me. That's the stuff that keeps me awake at night. So.
Well, it's an interesting topic to dig into. It's certainly a focus of the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT, They are pushing forward interoperability. And while all of the EHR systems say that they play well on interoperability, I think as we look around, we certainly continue to see a lack of interoperability, and you know, some could say there's a lack of standards, although even within systems that are well connected, I would ask, you know, even when data is flowing and data is available, as a person who's been in the personal health record domain since 1998 and you know, worked hard to bring people their data, one of my observations is just having a person's, you know, accurate and longitudinal data available to them is not necessarily all that interesting to them, and in order to make it more interesting, it really has to act on their behalf to do something value added. And so even with interoperability and data access, I'm wondering how that alone will really help consumers to achieve their objectives, having more efficient and better service.
Well, I think that's why it's why I have to draw that graph I was saying. If you could see my hands moving, that's the challenge of radio. If you could see my hands moving, it didn't matter with Google Health. It didn't matter with Health Vault. And the reason it didn't matter then is because we didn't have the devices, the inputs, the minute clinics, the services like Better. You didn't have that layer, so it became a repository for repository's sake. So I think the way I would look at it is think about something like Facebook Connect or even the way that Twitter works. None of those patients are talking about, none of those users are talking about OAuth. They're not talking about Facebook Connect platform. They're saying, I will connect Facebook by clicking this button because I'm going to get some value over here. So imagine if I can walk into the Minute Clinic and say, yeah, I don't know what that thing was with an E, but here it is on my phone. I can click this button and I can connect you to it. So what happens is that those connectivity platforms, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, other financial services, places that we've seen this over and over again, they are only there when there's a value chain. Privacy is interesting. People only feel that privacy is really evaluated when they get no value from it, right? I think, if anything, social media has taught us that people will share a lot of information when they feel like they get value from it, whether that's their email or something else. We finally have started to have a series of services at the consumer level where a patient can say, oh, I want that thing. I want better service from the MinuteClinic. I want a personal health assistant. I want my up data going into my Apple Health Kit that then goes to my insurance company because they're going to give me money off. Now that those movements are starting to happen, we need to take that out of just that case and allow the consumer to have that value and move that data around however they see fit. When we can do that, we're going to look back, the three of us, the people that are listening to this, there's some young person who's listening to this podcast who 20 years from now is going to think back and go, oh, right, I remember when that didn't happen, and I've built a billion-dollar company on the fact that now I can do that, and they're not worried about mumps and Vista integration and whether they want to do Commonwealth or Blue Button or CCDA or whatever. All of those things are going away, and we're getting to a consumer level. The EHR companies right now are only really concerned with meeting minimum requirements for meaningful use and integration. They're not talking about a consumer-grade data portability. And until we get a patient-empowered data portability, we've fallen short of the vision.
Oh, I knew that this half an hour was going to go too quickly. I've just written down at least 10 topics that I want to cover, from consumer rewards to privacy to Blue Button to patient portals. And yet I have exactly 2.5 minutes to ask you one last question. And first of all, before I do ask that, let me just first of all say that we have to do this again because it's just too important a discussion, and you have just a little too much knowledge to leave it at half an hour. So I must say that we're going to have to add another interview with you sometime in the not too distant future. But with the couple of minutes that we have left, I would like for you to look back at 2015. Help us understand what you think the most important either announcement or activity was in 2015 in the personal health space, and then or in 2014, and then look ahead to 2015, and what do you believe the most important thing that will happen in the next year will be?
Sure. So I think 2014. Looking back, I'll do these quickly, but probably one positive and one maybe not. I think that one of the biggest things that happened in 2014 was you brought up the Office of the National Coordinator, and even seeing Todd's role as the CTO change. We lost a lot of champions in Washington this year who did an amazing amount of work, right? We're lucky to have one here in Adam Dole, who's joined us. Farzad obviously leaving, a lot of changes in that organization, Todd's changes. And I think we're going to look back on that and think either, boy, we got a huge set of fresh blood in and that helped move things forward, or we lost a lot of champions and things slowed down. And we don't know yet what that's going to be, but I think that was a huge, huge thing for health IT. They kind of fly for those people, Doug and everybody else who was there, who aren't there anymore. And God knows they earned the right given how hard they work, but I think that's going to have a big impact. We'll see which direction it goes. On the positive side, healthcare is no longer this kind of niche thing in the corner. I mean, it has been pulled out, and it is as mainstream as you could possibly think it's going to be, from its investors, from its entrepreneurs, from companies that are thinking, you know, that have moved into the space. And it's really kind of finally shed some of those really false misconceptions about blaming the FDA for everything or blaming other, you know, this, you know, it's this overregulated industry and there's no opportunity here. That's finally over. So I think that's the other really positive thing that happened this year, is a lot of that stuff finally fell by the wayside.
Excellent. And is there one 10-second thing you could say about the year ahead?
Yeah, I think 2015 is going to be really interesting because we're heading in, as we head into an election year, this is going to be super consumer driven because everyone's going to be very worried about what's going to happen with policy. Other than the new Medicare policy changes, reimbursement, there's not going to be a lot of policy changes. And so it's going to be very consumer driven, which is very exciting.
Well, it will be very exciting, and we'll look forward to reconnecting with you to see how it's all going. Jeff Clapp of Better, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that will have to be the last word for today's ending broadcast for 2014. I want to thank our guest, Jeff Clapp, co-founder and CEO of GetBetter.com, for his time and insights today. Be sure and check them out on the web at www.getbetter.com. Follow them on Twitter via @BetterPHA, and do download the app from the App Store. So that will do it for 2014. Thanks for following our work on This Week in Health Innovation. We invite your comments, good, bad, or sideways on our efforts here. Ping me on Twitter via @2HealthGuru. Or drop me a line via Greg, G-R-E-G-G, @healthinnovationmedia.com. For Dr. Phil Marshall, this is Greg Masters wishing you a healthy, happy, and prosperous holiday season. And best wishes for 2014. And please do join us next year. This is Greg Masters saying bye now. Blew down the doors to let me in. Shattered windows in the sand.